As followers of Jesus, we, above all, should lead the nation in racial reconciliation.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I pray for unity over the
Ah, that was a sight to see. That was a sound to hear. That is music in God's ears. I'll tell you exactly what that was in a moment. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. The phone number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm sitting in the Truth Studios in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where everything first started 8.5 years ago, doing Saturday broadcasts beginning in March of 2008 in this very studio, sitting in this very seat. So it's great to be back here and face-to-face with the great team that puts our show together every day, engineered here in Winston-Salem. I posted a picture of it on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to take a look, you can do so. But I'd love to hear from you today, 866-34-TRUTH. We had an amazing show on Friday. We had almost 2 straight hours of calls with listeners wanting to weigh in on the issues of racial reconciliation. Callers wanted to weigh in and share their perspective on the pain that we're experiencing in America and the division that we're experiencing in America. And it is my belief that we as followers of Jesus are uniquely equipped to lead the way in racial reconciliation in America. We as followers of Jesus are uniquely equipped to heal the wounds and to bridge the divides. And on Facebook earlier today, I posted 5 reasons, I'll get into that, 5 reasons why we as followers of Jesus should be able to lead the way. Now, what you heard, the clip you heard, was a white cop leading in prayer, and the amens you were hearing were the voices of protesters at a Black Lives Matter protest. And they are praying together, a white cop and black protesters, praying together for unity, praying together for healing of the divide. That is what it is going to take. I laid out 10 declarations, 10 things that I believe are true. And I laid them out in an article that's on numerous websites now. You can read it by going to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And what I said was this: look, we're potentially at the brink of civil war, of race wars in America. We're potentially at the brink of real chaos and pain in America. And I'm saying this across the board. Tensions are rising on every level, and the elections, the volatility of the elections, and the nationalism behind the elections, that is going to increase the explosive nature of things. And because of that, I said, look, now's not the time to mince words. I can't worry right now about who might be offended if I said this or if I said that. I can't be concerned about that whatsoever. What I have to do is speak the truth in love and let the chips fall where they may. So I'm going to share those declarations with you. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. Here's what I ask for: be as candid with me as I'm being with you. Be as candid with me as I'm being with you, and do your best to listen first before responding, as I seek to do as well, to digest what others are saying, to hear, to weigh their perspective, and then to speak. So we're going to have a constructive, eye-opening broadcast today on The Line of Fire. Number to call to get in the conversation about the racial divides and the pain in America today, and the question about law enforcement and police doing a good job or a bad job. 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A black will die 1% or less at the hands of the police and 99% at the hands of a civilian, most often another black. So if you want to protect black lives, then you got to protect black lives not just against police, which happens rarely, although with tremendous attention, and which happens every 14 hours in Chicago. Every 14 hours, and we never hear from Black Lives Matter.
That was Rudy Giuliani speaking. Is he being racist in what he says, or is he addressing an issue that needs to be addressed? 866-34-TRUTH. Check this out. Secretary of Homeland Security, Jed Johnson, he stated that even though the Dallas shooter, Micah Johnson, told hostage negotiators he, quote, wanted to kill white people, especially white police officers, that it's still relatively early to qualify his actions as a hate crime. What in the world is Secretary Johnson, Secretary Johnson thinking? How in the world can he make a statement like that? Relatively early, still relatively early to qualify these actions as a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. If there's anything worthy of being called a hate crime, it's this. All right, so let me lay out some of my thoughts on where we stand today. You can tell me if you agree or disagree with me. I may read all 10 right now or expand on a few of them. We'll see how it goes. Number one, white Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Now, either I just offended lots of people or you're nodding your head agreeing. I'll repeat it. Number one, you can read this by going to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article. White Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Okay? Number one. Number two, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. When whites minimize the pain of blacks, or worse still, claim that they're just being pawns of the media or political leaders, they deeply insult their black brothers and sisters. Most whites really do not understand what it is like to grow up as a minority culture, and they cannot relate to the historic suffering of blacks in America, a history which is not as far in the distant past as we'd all like it to be. Number three, all black lives matter, not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. Number four, rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Number five, everyone must work together to address injustice and inequality wherever it raises its head, be it in the courts or on the streets. Number six, it is social suicide to launch a war against our law enforcement agents. Number seven, it is important today to state that all lives matter. Number eight, there is no comparison between a policeman overreacting and killing someone to another person intentionally targeting policemen for death. Number nine, the elephant in the room is the breakdown of the black American family. Number 10, there is far more that unites us than divides us. I'm going to read through these again, and I'll expand on a few of them here and there over the broadcast, but we're going to get you to weigh in very quickly. Number one, white Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Number two, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. Number three, all black lives matter, not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. Number four, rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Number five, everyone must work together to address injustice and inequality wherever it raises its head, be it in the courts or on the streets. Number six, it is social suicide to launch a war against our law enforcement agents. Number seven, it is important today to state that all lives matter. Number eight, there's no comparison between a policeman overreacting and killing someone and another person intentionally targeting policemen for death. Number 9, the elephant in the room is the breakdown of the Black American family. Number 10, there is far more that unites us than divides us. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to go straight to the phone, starting with Kevin in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure thing.
Just want to address some of the issues. First off, I think you said it was Secretary Johnson who made the statement that, you asked if that statement that he made was racist. I won't say that is racist. I think that it's...
No, excuse me, just to clarify, I asked if Rudy Giuliani's statement, if anyone thought that was racist. Secretary Johnson said that it's still relatively early to categorize that as a hate crime. So I just differed with him on that, but I didn't say that was racist. But yeah, back to you, sir.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for clarifying. First off, I think that I wouldn't define it as what Giuliani's statement as racist. I think what it is that it's uninformed, because when people say that there's more black-on-black crime, that's correct, but they also have to understand that there's that crimes perpetrated against white people are committed by a majority of white people.
Mm-hmm.
Crimes are normally committed against people within that same community or that same group or same ethnicity. So there's nothing surprising about that. So can his racist be defined as, can his comments be defined as racist? I wouldn't say so, but I would say it as uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can there be a dialogue between blacks and whites? As a black man who's actually been in communities with white people, who's been in communities of black people, who grew up in a majority Afro-American community, who served 8 years in the Army where I've had to deal with all different ethnicities, creeds, and cultures. Sure, we can communicate with one another, have a dialogue with one another, and interact with one another. But the frustration as a black man for me is that when issues like this have arisen, there has been a really slow response to mm-hmm. creating dialogue toward it. For example, if you look at the past cases with Ayanna Jones, with Eric Garner, with Tamir Rice, you know, these people in our community, in our culture, looked as if they were gunned down. These unarmed innocents were gunned down, and there was no real response from the people who did it, except for them to be acquitted of all charges. And it feels as if as a black man, if we're not being able to be protected by the ones who were sworn to protect us, then there's frustration there.
Yeah.
And our frustration is double when we try to be patient and allow the justice system to get some type of retribution, only to be denied that when officers get acquitted.
Yeah,
can I say one last thing, too?
Go ahead, real quick. Go ahead.
All right, real quick. Now, as I said, 8 years in the Army, what was frustrating for me is that when cops are allowed to shoot an innocent and not have any type of real retribution toward them. In the Army, during wartime, in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, every soldier is bound by the UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice. If there is an illegal shooting of an innocent, and that innocent dies, even if they don't die, then we are brought before a board, and we have to prove that shooting or that killing of an innocent or civilian wasn't done recklessly. If we can't prove that, then we are headed to jail.
Yeah, understood.
So, right,
yeah, and
so
yeah,
my thing is,
yeah, let me just jump in. I just because our phone lines are jammed, sir, and I want to make sure that I try to give everybody as much time as possible. That the very things you're raising, that's why on my list, point number 2 was there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. That was my second point in my 10 for the very reasons that you're sharing. And when I wrote, when whites minimize the pain of blacks, or worse still, claim that they're just being pawns of the media or political leaders, they deeply insult their black brothers and sisters. Most whites really do not understand what it is like to grow up as a minority culture, and they cannot relate to the historic suffering of blacks in America, a history which is not as far in the distant past as we would all like it to be. Kevin, you've articulated things well, and I appreciate it. Thank you for weighing in. And again, that's why that's high on my list, to say there is a real reason for the frustration, for the anger. No one's justifying violence against police. Kevin would be the first one to say, of course not. No one is justifying that or calling for that, God forbid. But as our first call on Friday said, we'd just like some empathy. We would like for our white brothers and sisters to show some empathy. And I think that's utterly important in God's sight, and it's the heart and soul of justice and loving our neighbor. All right, we'll be right back with more of your calls. Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. I want to encourage you to join our support team today. Become a torchbearer, one of our regular monthly supporters that enables us to broadcast the Line of Fire around America and around the world. And oh, every month we sow back into in many, many different ways. Join our team, become a torchbearer. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on donate.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, if we're really going to see a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution, that means the people of God leading the way. That means you and I being peacemakers. That means you and I being ambassadors of reconciliation. But you know, if you've ever done marital counseling, you've got to get both sides to communicate and open up about what's really going on and speak candidly. If you're going to hide things, feel a certain way and not say it, then you're going to get nowhere. So I appreciate Kevin, our first caller, getting us started. And I want to reiterate point number two in my list of 10, which you can read at AskDrBrown.org. There is a real reason for black frustration and anger. Now, let me give you another perspective. It's point number three. All black lives matter. Not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. So white critics have rightly asked, where are the rallies and protests when a three-year-old black child dies from random inner-city gunfire? And what about the disproportionate number of black babies killed in the womb, not to mention blacks killed by others blacks? So a black man named Richard posted on Facebook, we cannot pick and choose when we decide to make a stand. We're either all in, we must address black-on-black crime in addition to the murder of innocent blacks, or we're not in at all. We can't let these race-baiting politicians further divide us. If you haven't noticed, they want a race war. We must stand up and unite both black and white and whatever other ethnicity and reclaim our freedom. He's absolutely right. Now listen, you might say, you don't understand. As black Americans, we say it's a tragedy that there's such a high homicide rate in our midst. As black Americans, we say it's a tragedy when a little kid is shot in crossfire with gang violence. We say it's a tragedy. But that's something we have to work out in our own community. Whereas when we feel the system is against us, that's what hurts us so deeply. When we feel the system is against us and people are getting away with things because of color, that's what hurts us. Okay, I understand that, which is why it's important to make the whole statement. Yes, these other deaths are tragedies. And yes, we are marching through the inner city when that little three-year-old is killed with random gunfire. Yes. However, we are now calling on the system where we feel the system is against us. That's the conversation that we need to have if we're going to see racial reconciliation and healing of the deep divides that exist. And then if there's a political leader, whoever that political leader may be, whatever the color of their skin might be, and we feel that their rhetoric is unhelpful, let's not be provoked by it. If we feel that a protest group on either side of the issue has rhetoric that's unhelpful, let's not be pawns of someone else's agenda. Let's have our agenda as followers of Jesus. We go to Woodbridge, Virginia. All right, let's try. We'll go over to Arlington, Virginia. Jacob, welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Jacob, are you there? Lost Jacob. Let's go to Georgetown, Massachusetts. Ibrahim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Can you hear me clearly?
Loud and clearly. Sir, may I ask what your country of origin is?
I am from Kenya and Tanzania.
Kenya and Tanzania. Okay, that was my surmise that you were from Africa. So how long have you lived in America?
I have lived stayed in America for about 5 years, but I used to work here for a global company. So I did leave here and go back to my country.
Okay, but you grew up in a culture that was almost entirely black. Now you come to a culture that is white majority. So I'm sure your perspective is going to be unique in that respect. So eager to hear from you, sir. Go ahead.
So I've been listening to this debate on the race issue, especially after the recent killings. And I guess my concern has been the way that the black community tends to be put together. And I think this is a huge issue, and especially because the issue affecting the African American community. I refer to myself as African American or AAA, which means I don't have the historical background or the context that the African American community has gone through, and which means I don't qualify to be in that group. Not to say that I am better or less. No, not that. But I think if we have to address the issues that we're having in this country, then we have to look at them to be able to understand what group are we specifically dealing with, which is the African-American community, which has suffered multi-generational inequalities and injustices. And so if you combine those two groups, the recent Africans that did not come through slavery, and people like me, that have a very different experience and actually don't understand the issues of African American that they go through, which we're talking about a few million people, then we, at the end of the day, miss the real point of who is suffering. But also, if we come up with policies, those policies cannot work because it's going to be missing its target. So the African community, like me, is very different in terms of socioeconomic. They are highly educated, for example. They have very strong family foundations, so they do pretty well. Actually, my community would be the most educated in the state. And so if you put those groups together with the African-American community and say call them black, then you're doing an injustice to the African-American community.
Interesting.
So if you go to Ivy League schools, when they're trying to do to introduce policies to increase diversity, 90% of the black people who get there, they're not African American, they're African. If you go to the best jobs that are trying to increase, the best companies that are trying to increase diversity, you find Africans and not African American. So at the end of the day, the African American community tends to be left behind, because there's not a distinction between it and
that's a whole perspective then that's probably not factored in at all. So where there's a desire to help or reach out, it may not be done with the results that are desired. But there's something very, very important, and we're out of time in this segment, so I've just got to jump in. But thank you, sir. I'd love to interact further on these points. But for everyone that is still guilty of thinking that there's something inherently inferior about blacks, or inherently inferior about whites, or inherently inferior about Asians or Native Americans or Hispanics or whoever the group would be, what you need to recognize is if people are in a healthy family environment or in an equal social status within society, regardless of the race or ethnicity, they will all basically do equally well. Thank you for the call. Friends, we've got a terrific resource offer. You can get my entire audio teaching on Go and Sin No More free with the purchase of the Go and Sin No More book. Check it out at askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I've heard this. I've heard this argument that you can only be racist if you're in the majority culture. So that by definition, as Mark Lamont Hill now argues, black people can't be racist. Dylan, we should see if we can get Mark Lamont Hill to come on my show and discuss this. Yeah, black people can't be racist. To say that the Black Lives Matter movement is racist is bizarre to me, not just because black people don't have the institutional power to be racist or to deploy racism, but because the movement is called for justice. The movement is not just called for justice. The movement has incited hatred against others. And of course you can be racist without being the dominant power. I find that type of stuff to be completely unhelpful and the distraction from the real issues. All right, let's try again Arlington, Virginia. Jacob, are you here this time? Hello, Jacob.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
My issue really is because you keep saying we should apply the Christian principle, and I feel like the best approach could be like looking it to John 8, you know, when the lady actually broke the commandment, but Jesus Christ was like saying, even though you broke the commandment, you know, he was like, he didn't condemn the person. I think our approach more, a lot of times, we try to find who's right and wrong. And that's not actually Christian. There's a lot of mercy and forgiveness. And going to what Juliana spoke, there's an element of racism in this, because if you're on the other side, you're going to actually feel like a victim. And if you lose your child, no matter what, you will still feel the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cops, even who hurt the black, they too will feel the pain. You lose something, as in by killing somebody. You got to live with that. So it's a difficult situation for both sides. But the way to solve it, I think a lot of times we talk about, it's more patience. I don't think a lot of times the cops should just go into confrontations. There's a way they could like change the laws more to be more patient.
Let me ask you this, sir. Do you think the cops intentionally want to go out and have confrontations and shoot people?
No, I don't think so. And that's the truth. It's just like every other person who do something wrong. Sometimes they want to protect their own side. But the truth about it is, in the process of protecting your own side, you might be trying to be right and lose. We as Christians, we are trying to bring everybody together. We're trying to forgive, be merciful.
Yes.
That is the word of God. He's not taking sides. So each time we take sides, sometimes we're not bringing Christ's name up. The main thing is we're trying to walk with each other, look for patience, endurance. And actually, the people who suffer most is the blacks. It's not only the blacks in America, the blacks worldwide. I don't know why, but people are born blacks. And so people are born white too. I don't know why people hate each other, but some things have been there for long.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, and just to jump in, when I appreciate your thoughts, Jacob. Look, there are spiritual strongholds. There are just manifestations of sinfulness in human beings that we can hate people who are different. That rather than looking at someone as a colleague, we look at them as a competitor. It's almost like that person is somehow a threat to our well-being. But as I laid out on Facebook, five reasons why we as followers of Jesus should lead the way in racial reconciliation. One, we have a unique unity, having the same Father and being saved by the same blood. Two, we're called to be peacemakers and ambassadors of reconciliation. Three, as those who have been forgiven, we can forgive others. Four, in Jesus, there's neither black or white, yellow or red. Five, we know the life-changing power of the gospel. And with God, all things are possible. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
God, we look to you for strength.
Prayer is the only thing that's going to relieve this tension and stuff that we have in the city.
We need to rally around the police and our leaders and carry on and just try to show others who we really are.
We're at a tipping point, and we could go either way. And so it's important for us as a nation to try to figure out how do we not miss this moment? How do we make the changes that are needed and that are necessary so that we don't go off on the wrong side?
Reverend Brian Carter and others from Concord Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. According to Mayor de Blasio and his wife, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and his wife, Shirlane, so he's white, she's black. Black Lives Matter is, quote, a force for good that has, quote, changed the national discussion. All right, called it force for good that has changed the national discussion. And remember, he has been very hostile to the police, the police hostile to him. New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton said, we have a different perspective. Black Lives Matter is a force for good. It's about, this is de Blasio saying he has a different perspective than Bill Bratton. Black Lives Matter is a force for good. It's about peaceful protest. It's about shining a light on the problems that we have in race relations across this country. We've had a history of it, and it has not gone away, but we haven't had enough positive action on making change, and I'm very encouraged by the Black Lives Matter movement. That is what Mayor de Blasio and his wife said. Another perspective from a black police chief in Texas? Okay. According to him, he said, Black Lives Matter, as far as I am concerned, is a radical hate group. That is El Paso County Sheriff Richard Wiles. So as an African-American, he said, as far as I'm concerned, Black Lives Matter is a radical hate group. For that purpose alone, I think the leadership of this country needs to look a little bit harder at that particular group. The consequences of what we saw in Dallas is due to their efforts. So in my list of 10 points that I made, if you didn't hear them, you can read my article about racial tensions at AskDrBrown.org. Now is not the time to mince words. And I said rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Not a few leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement need to do some serious soul searching in light of the intentional targeted shooting of cops in several states this past week. And Professor George Yancey himself, an African-American, will be joining us, God willing, in a couple days on the broadcast. He describes Black Lives Matter as a, quote, group that pushes its own racialized agenda and expects compliance instead of communication. At the same time, point two in my list is there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. We have to understand what the issues are and then communicate in a way that is life-giving and bridge-building as best as we can, which means I may offend you, you may offend me, but we'll put the cards on the table, committed to listen one to another. So we'll speak the truth, and then we'll step away, and we'll think through what each one had to say. Let's go to Paramus, New Jersey. Mark, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Mr. Brown?
Doing well. Thank you, sir.
I guess I'm a young black male, and I've grew up in the New York City area, and I've been a victim of police brutality. And
give me an example of maybe the worst you've experienced so we can understand your perspective better.
My first real encounter with police officers were on a Palisade Interstate Parkway in New Jersey, where two police officers beat me because they didn't like my attitude toward them when they asked me for ID, and I said, for what? I'm not doing anything wrong. Why do I need to show you ID? And I walked away with that with all types of charges on me, and I did nothing wrong to them. I never touched them, never verbally assaulted them. And for many black Americans, this is a reality. So when we say all black lives matter, you can connect me as a black person doing the East Coast, on the West Coast, on the South, East. You connect us all by that, because we've all had an experience like that. So I don't think all black, when people say Black Lives Matter, I don't take it as like people get offended and they feel like it's racist, or they try to dismiss it and say, oh, well, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, why don't you guys get up in arms about black-on-black crime? Like, if you lived in the black community, you understand that we do get upset over that. But
right, so in other words, it's not what you want the nation to hear is when you perceive there to be systemic injustice, when you perceive there to be a problem with, quote, the system as a whole, and okay, we're not getting justice on the streets, but at least we'll get it in the courts, and then you don't get it in the courts, and your perception is that white America doesn't care. So you're saying, look, we're taking care of the issues in our own community, or we're hurting over these issues, or we're outraged over that little girl that got shot in, you know, the midst of gang violence and crossfire, but that's within our own family. This is something now where we're having an intersection of families and we feel like we're being mistreated. Yeah, I appreciate that perspective, Mark. I do understand where you're coming from. And that's where we need to communicate, because white America is saying, well, why aren't you having a march through the city over the three-year-old that was killed? Or why aren't you having a march through the city over all the black-on-black violence and the homicide? And you're saying, look, we're in pain over that. We're dealing with our problems, but here's where things are intersecting. So I think we just need to keep talking so we get everything on the table.
Right.
Let me ask you one other thing. Do you feel that just your gut level, be totally candid with me, okay? There's not a right or wrong answer here. But when you see police, is your gut level feeling they're not doing good, they're out to get us? Or is your gut level feeling, okay, that's the law, and, you know, just got to respect the law, but you don't have as much confidence in it as someone else might have?
I can't answer that because I'm biased just because of my experiences.
No, that's what I want to know. Based on your experience, what do you feel? That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Oh, I assume the worst. Always. Uh-huh.
Got it.
Never. Always.
And you would...
I never look at police officers as there to help. Never. Yeah. And I live in a suburban area and I never... ever looked at the police as any type of help.
Got it. Yeah, and that's why I asked the question. And would you say that your perspective is shared by many of your black American friends?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So the big question for white America is why? Is it because Mark is just a mindless young man who's a pawn of political radicals? No, I don't think so. Is it because he's just believing propaganda? No, I don't think so. It's an experience thing. And then others would say, yeah, but look, of course you get racially profiled because you fit the description of a criminal, and that's why you're getting mistreated. So what about the breakdown of the family? And the thing goes round and round. But first, let's start here. Let's understand that Mark's perspective is not uncommon, and there's a reason for it. So I appreciate you calling, and this is one of the very things I'm trying to say. There is a reason for the frustration and the pain. And for white America to not understand it, and I'm speaking totally broadly here when I say white America or black America, but for white Americans not to understand that, then that only throws salt in the wound. At least if we can understand, even if we haven't experienced it ourselves, we can understand it. Based on that, we can try to address the problem. Hey, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Listen, you know me. I'm going to do my best to get both sides of an issue on the table. I'm going to do my best to, if I offend everybody, I'd rather do that and get us thinking, but I'm not out to offend anyone. And by the way, I don't see sides to take here, personally. I don't, as God's people, as an earlier caller said, it's not about us taking sides. It's a matter of getting on the Lord's side. And the Lord is on the side of justice. The Lord is on the side of compassion. The Lord is on the side of truth. The Lord is on the side of love. The Lord is on the side of order. The Lord is on the side of righteousness. So when we come to these issues, it's not a matter of us taking sides. I'm on this side. No. Let's do our best to get God's heart and perspective and then bring his perspective to bear on everything in our society. Remember to go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Check out our latest articles, our latest YouTube videos. They are all constructive. They are all addressing these important points. And I believe that you'll be blessed and helped as you go there. And if you can stand with us and help us with the expenses of this radio broadcast, if we're being a blessing to you, help us to reach many, many more through the broadcast by joining us as a torchbearer, as a monthly supporter, or with your one-time gift. Again, you can do that all at the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. That's the place to go. We'll be right back with your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral clarity and spiritual truth by God's grace, doing my best to communicate that truth today. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. Ash, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
I just want to say that I appreciate you moving forward and talking about this topic. Knowing that you have a majority white audience, I think that this is a topic that the white audience needs to hear. A couple of misnomers that are frequently put out there are the fact that white people are killed by cops more than black people. And the information that's not taken into account are the total population percentage, right?
Yeah, so in other words, there are more whites killed every year by cops, but that's because the white population is, what, five times the size, four or five times? So statistically, percentage-wise, there are more blacks killed. Overall numbers, more whites killed. But yeah, percentage-wise, the killing of blacks by officers is higher. Yep.
Right. And along with that is unarmed blacks as well, too. And I think that the hard thing for myself as a black Christian is to have to legitimize this conversation. And we're still talking about the subject of Black Lives Matter. When someone from your vantage point or your platform doesn't dedicate, and maybe I'm limited in how many episodes I've heard from you, but I listen to you frequently because I really enjoy your perspective on a lot of things, but I don't know how many complete shows you've dedicated to. I want to hear about white privilege or white supremacy and these things. And so when you don't have conversations that actually dive deeper into those issues, but we have to legitimize whether or not there's injustice in America, it's almost working backwards.
Yeah, I understand it. So here's where I'll interact with you candidly. All right. Whenever these issues are before us in the news, I talk about them. I've written about them extensively. If you go back to Trayvon Martin's situation, if you go back to Michael Brown and Ferguson, whenever these things are in the news, whenever these issues are coming up, we're talking about them on the air, and I'm writing about them, and often soliciting phone calls. And I don't know, demographically, I would say that I have a higher percentage of black listeners than would be demographic in communities, just based on when I've done events and people have come up to me. And I'm always amazed, Ash, that many people never go online to see what I look like, because I've had quite a few black listeners over the years meet me face-to-face and say they didn't know I was white, which is all the more fascinating to me because of the nature of the discussion we're having. But I'm not going to have a show about white privilege, because that's not the term that I'm using, nor is that the lens through which I'm seeing things. I'll talk about, is there injustice in society? I'll talk about, give me a perspective as a black American, growing up, how you view our history, how you view America. In other words, I'm not just going to accept the white privilege thing, because you could grow up in a white community and stand for justice and love the poor and care for everyone the same and not see race at all. In other words, there's an assumption in the white supremacy or white privilege thing. I'm not going to buy into that any more than I'm going to buy into other rhetoric. What I'm going to try to do is say, let's discuss the issues and enlighten me. And I can't tell you how much I've benefited personally from the perspective of callers you included. In other words, I listen carefully, and I do my best not to take a side, but to go before God and say, God, how can we bring your perspective to bear here? But whenever these issues are before us in the news, I'm doing my best to address them. They are major. And if you continue to listen, I think you'll know that if you're able to check out the Friday show, the show from last Friday, it's on my website, askdrbrown.org. Just click on Line of Fire there on the website. The calls were tremendous, very, very helpful, and overwhelmingly from African-American listeners. But, hey, my phone lines are jammed. Thank you for weighing in. I listen to your words with interest. I listen to your words with interest, and I'm doing my best to get the message out to white America as well. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH. Des Moines, Iowa. Daniel, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. It's nice. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am white America, and I got something I want to lay on the table for everybody that wants to hear it. I've never experienced riots and violence and things of this nature. I was born in South Louisiana, and sure, we had a little racial tension here and there. I experienced encounters with cops. Always, yes, sir, no, sir. You got an ID? Sure, sir, here it is. No problem. Never had any problem with cops. But what I do got a problem with is people in this country that think they're going to build another country inside this one. And they are calling for death to all white people, also known as the New Black Panther Party. And
yeah.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has talked about that. And that right there, every American, black, white, red, yellow, they don't care. They need to stand up against that now and anybody that supports it, because that right there is a civil war that a lot of people, a lot of white Americans, they're buying guns and they're arming themselves, and the only thing that's going to distinguish us apart is the color of our skin, and that is not what America is. We have been living in peace for 200 years, and these people come in this country. It started in 1995 in October of 95, if I remember right, when Louis Farrakhan started that Million Man March, and he started preaching that the white man was the devil. That is uncalled for in this country.
Yeah.
They need to go and look at Darfur and Mogadishu. They need to go watch it down, because that's what this country is going to end up being if they don't shut that down and shut it down now.
Yeah, and let me just, I just got to jump in. I know you're passionate about this. As I wrote in my article, point number four, rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated, period. And point number six, it is social suicide to launch a war against our law enforcement agents. Absolutely, without question. At the same time, please don't have the idea that it was Louis Farrakhan that started a notion of being discontent in the black community, or saying, hey, we lived in harmony for 200 years. Many black listeners said, what are you talking about? We were slaves to the mid-1800s. And there was legal segregation against us until a little over a generation back. What are you talking about? That perspective must be heard as well. By the way, just one other thing to put in. According to a major study I read, black cops are more likely to fire the trigger against blacks than white cops are. One interesting thing. And according to the New York Times, in officer-involved shootings in 10 cities that were surveyed, officers were more likely to fire their weapons without having first been attacked when the subjects were white. So let's just get facts on the table. But I want to reiterate, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger, and we need to understand that, and we need to address it. And anything that leads to violence, anything that leads to attack on police or on others, that is absolutely to be repudiated by all sides. Hey, we are out of time right now. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Check out our special resource offer and our latest videos and articles. My bottom line today, emotions can run so high, blood is shed in the streets. As followers of Jesus, we must step higher. Yes, it's true. Our religious freedoms are under fire. You've got to hear what's happening in California.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, we will return to the issues of racial divide in America. We will return to what's happened over the weekend. Protests, more arrests, more blood being shed, more attacks on police, more questions about police brutality, all in the last 72 hours. We'll talk about that. There are some other things that we need to get to that are important as well. But the number to call to get in the conversation, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. A shout out to everyone listening to me right now on 8:30 a.m. or 97.7 FM on our great Truth Radio Network in Greater Greensboro, North Carolina. I am right now in Winston-Salem, just minutes away from Greensboro, in Winston-Salem, in the Truth Studios now with our great team here. And I'm going to be speaking one more night together with Alex McFarland. We have one more night of meetings, and it was great to meet many of you face-to-face. So many of you came up to me yesterday and said, hey, we heard you were coming, and it was just great to meet you. So join me tonight. This is the Standing with Courage, Compassion, and Clarity Conference. Tonight at 6:30 p.m., we will start. And this is at Life Community Church, a fine congregation, 4900 West Wendover Avenue in Jamestown. I normally don't give these announcements out nationally because so many of you are listening from different parts of the country. But because this is right in the base of our home studio and we have so many of you that listen in this neck of the woods, so again, if you're listening to me right now at 8:30 a.m. or 97.7 FM, that means you're only minutes away from where I'm going to be tonight with Dr. Alex McFarland. We'll be talking about cutting-edge moral and cultural issues. That's Life Community Church, 6:30 p.m. tonight, 4900 West Wendover Avenue in Jamestown, North Carolina. All right, the attack on religious freedoms in America today is very real. This is not just some figment of the imagination of Christians with a persecution complex. The tide has turned where there is downright hostility, hatred, negativity, anger towards followers of Jesus. And there are laws being passed that are discriminatory against followers of Jesus that are basically saying, if you will hold to what Scripture says, if you will believe what the Bible says, that if you will do that, you will be punished by the law. In other words, you cannot hold to your faith in the public square without there being consequences. And this, in a nation that was founded on religious liberties, this, on a nation that was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, this on a nation that esteemed the Bible highly, through especially in our earliest history, where people would learn to read and write so that they could read the Bible for themselves, where the basic lessons they would have in the ABCs would be tied to Scripture verses, where whole generations of Americans grew up with these values as being considered fundamental. Now, to hold to them, you could potentially not just be put out of business, but as a college or university in California, you could have federal funding withheld, which would effectively shut you down as a college or university. So we're going to come back and address this issue. This should concern every Christian in America. We'll be right back.
Fire we please, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to focus on California. And you know, what happens in California can affect the entire nation. I want to talk about SB 1146. I've written about it. We've addressed it. But things are absolutely on the front burner now, and we need to understand what is happening. My guest, Brad Dacus, is the founder and president of the Pacific Justice Institute. You hear him on the Truth Radio Network with his Dacus Report Saturday mornings and other times during the week as well. And I think the one thing I've consistently done is mispronounced his name, but we'll get it all. All right, Brad, I actually had two different notes here on my board telling me how to pronounce your name, but it's Dacus, correct?
That's right, Dacus. It's a bad data cuss.
Got it. All right.
Dacus.
SB 1146, what exactly is this, and how direct an assault on freedom of religion is this?
It's a very direct assault on religious freedom. What it basically says is that in order to... For a student to get a Cal Grant to go to a Christian college, that Christian college has to effectively bend its beliefs and its convictions, violate its convictions, and provide student housing to openly practicing gay couples or transgender couples and also they have to post an announcement in several places informing the world that they're bigots and that that they have discriminatory policies with regards to hiring professors who are openly practicing homosexuals or transgenders. And so it's a real attempt, a cheap attempt to stigmatize these universities, Christian universities, and to basically, paint a mark on them so that they can be pressured and pushed and isolated and forced to change their theology and their convictions and no longer really be a practicing Bible-based Christian college anymore. That's their goal.
All right. So on the one hand, right now, they're not directly targeting, say, a seminary that was training pastors as directly. But let's take something like Biola, all right? Well-known Christian university in California. So because they have moral standards based on Scripture and because students sign on to these things. So, for example, if a guy and girl are living together and they want to join housing on campus, no, that's not going to happen. The same thing with a gay couple, even if they were, quote, married. No, that's not going to happen. If you had a professor who was an open homosexual and said, hey, this is the lifestyle I'm living with my partner, they would not be allowed to teach there. It's a Christian school. And if he had left his wife and was living in adultery and said, yeah, I'm in adultery, but I'm free to teach her, no, he'd be in violation of their moral conduct code.
Right.
But right now, you can hold to that as long as it doesn't have to do with homosexuality or transgender issues. Otherwise, you will not be eligible for the funding, and you will be basically branded as bigoted and homophobic. So, who's behind this bill, and how far has it gotten?
Those who are behind it is the LGBT movement and the organizations. They basically control every Democrat elected to the state legislature in California. They get what they want, they demand it, and legislators give them what they want. And the reason is because the Democratic legislators, assemblymen in California, that's the large of their money for their campaigns and their backing come from the LGBTQ. I guess they've added Q to their initials. So that's what they do. So they get their money. The Republicans don't get the money from LGBTQ, but they're outnumbered 2-1, and just almost 2-1 in the state Senate and the state Assembly. So it's a very dreary situation in California. And, of course, there's a lot of people who vote for these Democrats thinking that they're, their ideology, and they don't realize that that they're supporting things that the I think the average, even the average Democrat in California would be opposed to.
So where does the bill stand right now?
The bill stands, and it has yet to be voted on by the Assembly. So it was already approved by the State Senate. So it's already made it through there. They have a month break, and then they come back again, and they're going to come back for a final vote. So it gives us, we have about a month of time, we the people of California, to call our legislators. And then we at Pacific Justice Institute are encouraging people to set up meetings during these 30 days in the local offices of their legislators to meet with them and to talk with them and to respectfully let them know why they're opposed to it, and then to ask the legislator what they're doing to oppose and stand up against this legislation. And if they're not, why not? And it's just that need for people to really put pressure on these legislators for them to know that this is a big issue, that Christians are not wimps. We don't like to, you know, just to be trampled on and be forced to deny our faith and deny the teachings of God's Word and be isolated to no longer being a significant part of the educational culture. And so that's that. We need people to step up to the plate in the state of California. And also in other states, they need to be talking to their legislators to say, how can we prevent this from ever happening in our state?
Yeah, and as bizarre as it would seem, someone said it never happened in my state. Well, 5 years ago, we told you it was going to happen in California. That would have been far-fetched for California as well. So what would be the practical effect if this bill is passed and the governor signs it into law? Practically speaking, what would happen to an institute like BIOLA?
Yeah, practically speaking, BIOLA would be in a terrible situation. Either first, they'd have to deny students who are receiving Cal grants, so low-income students, middle-class students who need that funding to be able to go to college. They'd have to say, no, you can't come here because we can't accept your Cal Grant funding because the state won't allow us to get it. The state won't allow us to receive your Cal Grant funding. So you can't go here. You'll have to go some secular place and all the best. The other option would be for BIOLA to give in to their requirements and compromise their beliefs and convictions, postings which basically say we're homophobic bigots in essence and intolerant and discriminatory was a word that specifically I know is required, they have to post this in multiple places. That is something they might be able to deal with, that stigmatizing, which is what it's going to be in an attempt to rally society to condemn it and to not let their kids go there because these are bigots. The housing, though, is another issue that they could, what they could possibly have to do is to say, okay, as far as married couples, we will no longer provide married couple housing. You'll have to get outside off-campus housing. Only unmarried couples can have housing, can qualify for housing, and the reason is because they're going to have to recognize same-sex couples or quote-unquote married. I say quote-unquote because in the eyes of God and the institution of marriage, it's clearly not marriage.
Right.
So I'm not going to give a full qualification, but that's what we're looking at. And if it's a terrible situation because if they give up the Cal Grant funding, then they're going to have to. It's going to hurt their universities and maybe directly threaten their ability to survive, particularly given their constraints and their financial commitments regarding buildings and things like that they've constructed.
Yeah, and then when you think of the Christian students that want to go there, they can only go there with outside help, with the help of a grant, and what California would basically be saying to the school and to the student is because of your Christian convictions, you will not get this grant.
Right. That's the bottom line. Because you believe in what the Bible teaches, we're going to punish you. And the thing is so important, this isn't just speculation as to their motives and intent. This was a part of in their testifying as to why they need this law. They specifically called out BIOLA by name.
Really?
And Azusa Pacific by name. And Cal Baptist universities specifically talking about these Christian intolerant universities and how we need to bring this to an end. And we need to step on these people and we need... I mean, they didn't even, they were unabashedly open about it. Now, that may come back to bite them if we at Pacific Justice, if this becomes law and we have to file a lawsuit and challenge it, yeah, that may come back and bite them. But there is no doubt as to their open, blatant hatred and bigotry and intolerance towards people of the Christian faith. And the people, once again, I'm talking, when I say they, I'm talking about the Democrat legislators who overwhelmingly dominate the legislature, yeah, as well as the state assembly and the state assembly in the state of California, much to the demise of many of their constituents.
And Brad, what's the website for Pacific Justice?
You bet. It's pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org.
All right. Keep up the great work. We're standing with you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let us return to the issue of racial divide in America today. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire. My colleague, Steve Strang, over at Charisma Media, he wrote an article, "These racial divides are principalities and powers we must battle in the spirit. These racial divides are principalities and powers we must battle in the spirit." And I think it's important, as we talk about these issues, that we bring in the spiritual perspective, that we bring in the nature of spiritual strongholds. Spiritual strongholds in people's minds, spiritual strongholds in terms of influence on attitudes, and demonic powers that will not get dislodged. I was talking to a pastor in one particular southern city. This is Michael Brown. You are listening to The Line of Fire. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. I was talking to a pastor, a white pastor in a southern city, and he told me that racism is a stronghold, that it used to be white racism against blacks when there was kind of a majority position in that direction. And then he said things shifted, and now it's black racism against whites. And he said it's just a stronghold. It is something that you think, okay, we'll fix the one thing, level it out. No, and then it goes the other way. And you realize, okay, this is a spiritual battle that goes deeper. This is a spiritual battle. It's not just a matter of political issues. It's not just a matter of racial divide. Yeah, we have to approach everything in the natural, but spiritually as well. And we need to come against demonic lies. We need to ask God for deliverance from strongholds in our own thinking. And we need to pray against demonic powers that want to divide and destroy. 866-34-TRUTH. So we resume our conversation about how believers can lead the way in racial reconciliation in America. We go to Boston, Massachusetts. Elise, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I'm glad that you accepted my call, and thank you for all that you do.
Well, you're very welcome.
I wanted just to mention something that I saw recently on social media, and it was a woman, I'm not sure if you saw this video or not, she was doing a social experiment, and she had an audience full of white people, and she was a white woman. And she said, how many people in this audience want to be treated as this society in general treats our black citizens? The people that want to be treated that way, stand up. And no one stood up. So she said, well, let me repeat myself again. I want to ask you, how many people in the audience would want to be treated like the black people are treated in our society in general? And nobody stood up. So she said, the fact that nobody stood up proves to me, and probably the people that are watching, that everybody in this audience knows what's happening. You know you don't want the treatment to be for you, so how would you want it to be for another group of people. And so the point that I'm calling to make is that I really believe that white society knows what's happening. They don't want to admit what's going on with the way our society is treating black people. The systemic racism, the institutional racism, the economic racism, the physical racism that we go through every day. When I get up in the morning, I have to put on my, when I put my clothes on, I have to put on my armor to prepare myself for whatever racist thing is going to happen to me.
Give me an example of what you're putting your armor on to, what's going to come your way that's not going to come my way as a white American.
Okay, so I'll walk into a store to go shopping, and the people who work in the store will follow me around the store asking me if I need any help. If I need help, I will ask you, and even if I say that I don't, a lot of times they still stand at a distance to watch me as if I'm going to steal something. Or if I walk by somebody and I'm waiting for the bus, especially if it's at night coming from work, and there's a white person standing there, they'll hold their pocketbook like I'm going to, you know, rob them or something.
All right, this is very, very helpful, these illustrations. So let me play the devil's advocate for a second, all right? I'm sure you won't mind.
Okay.
Well, Nona, you're just perceiving things a certain way. You've got such a hang up about being black, you're perceiving it. When I go into a store, they come up to me and they ask me, I'm white, and they come up to me and they ask me if I need help. I don't perceive that a certain way. It's just your perception. So I know you have an answer. I'm playing the devil's advocate so that you can get your narrative out more clearly. You know, respond to it, because a lot of people think, what are you talking about? You're just seeing things that aren't there because of your own perception, and it's in your mind. So what would you say to those people?
Well, what I'd say to those people is this. Explain something like this. When my children were 5 and 6 years old, they came home from school and asked me, what does the N-word mean? A 5-year-old and a 6-year-old came and asked me, what does the N-word mean?
Mm.
Do you want to know why? Because somebody called them that. And you want to know what I had to tell them? I don't know how to explain it to you. But the thing that I had to tell them was that this is the way this society is, and I want you guys to be prepared to be used to it, because it's going to happen for the rest of your life. And my kids are now 22 and 24, and they have been through these racist issues for their life.
Mm.
We prepare our children to deal with the way society treats us.
Yep. Yeah, and Elise, when I wrote Saturday night, and published yesterday and today, my article on with racial tensions where they are now, now is not the time to mince words. So I made 10 points in my article. Point number one was, white Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. And then point number two, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. When whites minimize the pain of blacks, or worse still, claim that they're just being pawns of the media or political leaders, they deeply insult their black brothers and sisters. Most whites really do not understand what it's like to grow up as a minority culture, and they cannot relate to the historic suffering of blacks in America, a history which is not as far in the distant past as we would all like it to be. Elise, I got to be candid with you. I hate the fact that you've experienced this and that your kids have, and that's just reality. I hate that. I didn't grow up with that mindset in my own household. My first organ teacher, by the way, was an openly gay man when I was about 7 years old. He and his partner would have dinner at our home. And then the next organ teacher I had was a black man married to a white woman, and they had been rejected by family and society because of an interracial marriage. He was my second organ teacher. And so I grew up in a certain environment, but this is, look, you got to get this out. You use the platform of my radio show to shout this out to white America, because frankly, it's different than our experience, and we don't know it. I know we know it, but we don't know it this clearly. So thank you. Thank you for calling.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I pray that during the unity of the spirit, everybody, whatever place as we walk in, you just pour out your spirit upon us, Lord, that we would walk together in your spirit. Thank you, God, for all the blessings. We pray these blessings over you right now. In the name of Jesus. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father.
This is what we need more of, and this is what we have to model. It's a white police officer praying in the midst of a black crowd. It was a Black Lives Matter protest rally, and a white police officer is in the midst of the crowd leading in prayer as black and white Christians together pray for unity, together pray for harmony. We need it. We absolutely need it. Before the last break, I was speaking to Elise in Boston, Massachusetts, and I asked her, tell me about your experiences growing up. Tell me about what you live with. And she said something very painful to hear, which is that her 5 and 6-year-old kids came home from school, 5 and 6, asking her what the N word meant. And that what she had to tell them was, listen, just going to have to prepare to hear that the rest of your life. They're now in their 20s, and that has been their experience. I mean, that's despicable and unacceptable on every level to me. I know there are whites who hate blacks and blacks who hate whites and Hispanics who hate Asians and Asians who hate Hispanics. I understand you got bad apples everywhere, but not in a way that you're going to grow up with systemically. And that's the problem. So I want to continue this conversation with Elise and welcome others to join in, 866-34-TRUTH. And Elise, here's what I want to throw out to you and then back to you for your final comments. When you mentioned the survey of a white woman surveying a bunch of other whites in the audience and saying, how many of you want to be treated the way black Americans are treated? Stand up. None of them stood up or raised their hand. None of them said that. On the one hand, you say that white America realizes that there is mistreatment. I still don't think most white Americans get it. I don't mean that it's because of hate or malice or bias, just different upbringing, different life experience. And that's why we have to have these conversations to understand how my wife Nancy said to me many times, it's hard being black in America. Now, she grew up in the same place I did, you know, white suburbia. I started in New York City, but grew up in white suburbia. Yeah, we understand this. We don't always understand it as full because we're not in your shoes. You know, that's the way it's going to be with anybody. So last comment, back over to you.
So I was going to say the exact same thing. You see, a lot of white people grow up in these Pleasantville neighborhoods with their lily white neighbors and their God complexes, looking down on different aspects of society. We don't have the same privileges, and I am so sick of people saying, well, you can just go out and you can do the same thing I do. It's not true. We are socioeconomically, oppressed from the beginning, and so everything that I get, I'm going to have to scratch for. I am a law-abiding, educated black woman who brought her children up and her family to be law-abiding, educated black people. But the first thing people see is my skin. I don't care how hard I strive. The first thing that I have to overcome is my skin color and the idea that lumps all black people together, that we're all criminals. Now, let me give you the example of, what is his name, Castile, the second one who was murdered. He was a law-abiding citizen who had been working since he was 15 years old. He had a license, a permit to carry his gun. But what did the media do? Did they laud him for being a law-abiding citizen? No. The first thing they wanted to do was look into his background and see if they could find some criminal, you know, activity to justify what they did, which was wrong.
Yeah, and let me just say this one last thing. Thank you for everything you said, and I it's painful for me to hear it, but it must be said. So thank you for shouting it out to my listening audience. All the media coverage I heard was the opposite, was indicting the police in that shooting in Minnesota. I just want to say that, but thank you for calling. We're working together, same team. Hey, this is Michael Brown. I want to invite you to join me for our second ever trip to Israel, February 25th through March 6th, 2017. This is a great opportunity. I get to interact with you, our radio listening audience, and our ministry partners as we experience the land of Israel together, and it will be a life changer. We've got a great price on the trip, and if you're one of our monthly supporters or torchbearers, you're eligible to receive a special discount for this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Space is limited. And we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip to secure your spot, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Israel banner or call our office at 704-782-3760.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for joining us. I do hope you can join me next year in Israel. It will be the trip of a lifetime. Find out more at AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. So my latest article, I list 10 points for discussion. We've had some great discussion online through it and some great calls today. Right now, we're at the precipice of all-out race wars in America. And let me just tell you, you know who's going to suffer the most if we have all-out race wars in America? You know who's going to suffer the most? Poor blacks. Uh-huh. The ones that might be the most aggrieved right now, the way everything is in our country, if there are race wars, they'll end up suffering more than anybody. So everything I say, my concern is for justice for all. My concern is for the well-being of all. The side that I'm on is on the Lord's side, the side of justice, the side of equality, the side of freedom, the side of fairness. So I laid out these 10 points. If you haven't read them, expand it in this article, which could get everybody offended, but we've had many people say it's the best thing they read on it. So I'm glad to see that as I'm trying to lay out the issues fairly and honestly. But a lot of what I've written over the years is with the help of you, my listening audience. Your calls, your interaction has been tremendously helpful to expand the perspective of our listeners from all sides of the discussion. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. I'm only minutes away from there, Kayla. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I wanted to comment on just kind of add a little bit to what Elise was saying. It's the tone when you're spoken to as a black female. I don't know, when we interact with white females, it's almost like, I don't know if it's fear or if it's stereotype, but it's kind of like, it's a different tone. Even when they ask you how may I help you, the tone is not genuine, and you can see that. And even like places I've worked, I've been the only black person or with the only other one black person, and they can do things that we should always get in trouble with, like being late or something like that, but it's kind of swept under the rug, so to speak, when it's a white person versus what a black person does. You know, the tone is different with everything that I feel, my experience. The tone is just different, always.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not doubting a word you're saying, Kayla. This is nothing new that I'm hearing. It's just troubling to hear because it's not in that sense the world I live in. You know, in the gospel world, working around the world in many, many different cultures, having good friends from many different nations and many different ethnicities, this is just so foreign, but I know it's reality. So Kayla, again, as I asked Elise, let me allow you to respond to what some people would be saying and saying, Kayla, it's just in your own head. You're imagining this. It's not real. Maybe there was real hostility in the last generation, but it's not there anymore. Look, after all, we elected an African-American president, and we have so many leaders in America in all sectors of society that are black. It's just your own perception. What would you say to that?
My perception, and you know why? Because it's my experience. It's really easy to kind of not understand. I get it. And I have, you know, friends from all races that they really don't understand. And I get that because they haven't experienced it. When you've been conditioned to be treated this way, and you're used to it.
Mm.
I mean, it's second nature. If I know when I'm at work, like how Elise was saying, when she gets stressed, not only does she have to put on her armor, we call it put on your face. You have to literally put on your face because, you know, you have to go into work and you have to talk differently. I can't talk how I normally would talk if I'm having a conversation with my friends, because it's going to be perceived differently. And I even like, I had a situation at work where one of the ladies yelled at me. And she kind of yelled at me in front of everyone, and it shocked me, and it hurt my feelings. And so I went to my manager, and I said, you know, I'm so highly offended by this. This really hurt my feelings. He watched her do it, and he asked me, how so?
Mm.
How so? I'm at work, and someone's yelling at me at work. I'm in a professional office environment in one of the best neighborhoods, you know, with other professionals that are adults. You know, I mean, it's that type of stuff. But if I would have done that, I'm certain I would have came back to work the next day. Everyone would have felt threatened and, you know, what is she going to do next? You know?
Yeah.
It would have been that type of tone.
Yeah. So Kayla, again, the very reason we open our phone lines is so that you can speak to our entire listening audience, which is multi-ethnic and includes people from many backgrounds. I'm sure we acknowledge that in every community, every race, ethnicity, there are bad apples and there are bad examples, right? So when you have maybe the best known young black face that an American knows is maybe some black rapper, and he's got his, you know, his pants hanging down, and he's, you know, speaking in ways and, you know, against the pigs and almost calling for violence and something like that, then obviously the bad apple, that can be a prominent bad apple, discredits everybody else. And then you have the whole history of racial segregation in America. So you've got the different factors. You've got our bad history, which is still there. I wish it wasn't at all, but it's still there on certain levels. And then you have the bad examples, and then that kind of drags down, you know, others. So it's a shame. It's got, we have to figure out ways to move forward. And one thing is to make people aware, you know, to make people aware. See, everybody sees color. We say we don't see color. Now, we all see color. The question is how do we respond to it? I love diversity. I have a certain esteem for different cultures and the unique things that they bring. You know, I joke about this. This is totally superficial and minor, but just to make a point, that I was preaching for a pastor friend of mine. It's basically an all-black church, and the whole church is all about honor, you know, just part of the culture, honoring the guests, honor their visit, honor the speaker. And the whole message, everybody's talking back to me, and we're having a blast. A couple weeks later, I was preaching in basically an all-white church, and halfway through, I stopped. I said, you know, talk to me, say something, respond. In other words, there's things I appreciate in culture. There's different aspects of life and community that each culture has strengths in that I learned to love. But boy, we got a lot of problems to address, and we got to address them on our knees together. But thank you for communicating openly. I know it's not easy, so thank you for weighing in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I want to point out two key points you just made. I appreciate all cultures and love. I love it. I totally agree, wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Yep. God bless you. Thanks for the call. All right, let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Shantina, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I've been listening to your show. It's just so much to comment on. I just don't know where to start.
Yeah.
I am, you know, I am a single parent, you know. I've been divorced for a while, and I have a young son who's 24 years old, and I have a daughter who's 22. But I don't know. You know, I think it's several different things, you know, from my experience in raising my son. And, you know, one thing I tried to stay away, you know, one thing I try to do is not to, I had, you know, try to make sure I didn't wind up in the project. You know, I really, you know, I know this may, people may not want to bring this up, but I just felt like a lot of these young men are being raised without fathers. And, you know, that's a big issue. So when you're not raised, you don't have a father figure. You know, you got a lot of these sons that are listening to the wrong things. You know, like you said earlier, like some rap groups or something like that, they have a, you know, some stuff from BET is not good for them, you know.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's a big influence on the black culture. And one thing I did was not to raise my son in that type of environment. I did everything I could. You know, I even told him, you're not going to wear your pants sagging. There's certain things, the way you wear yourself, the way you carry yourself, and not everybody can send out the wrong message.
Tell you what, stay right there. I want to let you finish on the other side of the break. We'll get to more calls. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Our search of this suspect's home in Mesquite leads us to believe, based on evidence of bomb-making materials and a journal, that this suspect had been practicing explosive detonations, and that the materials was such that it was large enough to have devastating effects throughout our city and in our North Texas area. We're convinced that this suspect had other plans and thought that what he was doing was righteous, and believed that he was going to make law enforcement and target law enforcement make us pay for what he sees as law enforcement's efforts to punish people of color.
And of course, the extreme poignancy of that quote is that the Dallas Chief of Police, David Brown, the man you heard speaking right there, himself is a black American. 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. All right, we go back to Richmond. Shantina, just wanted to let you finish what you were sharing.
Basically, I was saying, you know, I raised my son, you know, as a single parent, and I just, you know, I'm prayerful, and, you know, sometimes you got to, you know, it's a spirit of deception and stuff that's going on. It's not just one thing, you know, we all have to pray. And, you know, you can't put in your mind that as a black person, you know, you're going to experience racism. It does, you know, it just, that's the world we live in. But I don't go into every store thinking every white person's going to be following me or think I'm going to steal or anything like that. You know, I just feel like, you know, I raised my son, and the thing that I really want, my point I'm really trying to get to say is that, I told my son, you know, look, before even Trayvon Von Martin was killed or whatever, the situation with him, I had a talk with my son that certain things you don't carry yourself a certain way. I told him, you're not going to wear a sagging, you're not going to look like a thug, you're not going to talk. You know, I fought hard, you know, to keep him from a certain, a certain things I tried, you know, told him to stay away from, because a certain spirit is attached to it. It's the thing I'm trying to say.
Yep.
And, you know, when I raised my son, I was living in an apartment, I immediately had to get out of there, because number one, I'm not going to say it's certain people that love, some people love, confusion and love, like drama and stuff started. And, you know, I had, you know, in the neighborhood I was living in, it was peaceful. Then certain groups, more of these group of people started moving in. I knew I had to move out, because then out of that came somebody selling drugs. And then when the drugs came, there was a security officer that was killed. They murdered him right in the neighborhood we was in. And I knew immediately I had to get out of there, because the wrong spirit had come in to the, to the apartment area.
And
because there's no men, you know, it's certain things is just out of order. And when you got stuff out of order, the wrong spirit comes in and it takes over and it wreaks havoc.
Yeah. And listen, I appreciate the efforts that you made as a single mother, having been divorced years ago, as you shared, the efforts that you made to say, hey, we're going to get into a different community. And that's sacrificial, But obviously your kids are indebted to you for doing that. Hey, thank you for the call and for your honesty. That's why we're having this discussion. Very much appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll stay in Richmond, Virginia. William, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you so much. Hope you're doing well. You know, this issue with, you know, racial issues with some black having to deal with cops is really, really, really difficult. It's very uncomfortable. I do not want to be pulled by any police officer because I've never been got any tickets before, but I have been pulled over before. And in some instances, the cops actually, they try to escalate the situation by being very disrespectful and rude when you're communicating with them in a very composed and respectful manner. And they're supposed to be professionals, but in some cases, they're not the professionals. It's almost like a bully. But the thing that really disappoints me the most and is most hurtful is my family, my wife and I and our sons, we have, for the past over 20 years, we have been members of two predominantly white churches. And, you know, the churches have all talked community, and we spend time together, you know, members, et cetera, and we're in a small group. And but what's really disappointing and most hurtful is that when things like this happen, you go to church and nobody says a word. They continue on as though you're not hurting as an individual. So it makes you wonder, you know, do they really even care about me and my people according to the flesh? Paul had a longing desire for his people according to the flesh. That's only natural. There's nothing unspiritual about it. It's natural. But when the members of your church don't even try and comfort you and say, and he just acknowledged, you know, it really is, you know, this is bad. You know, we do not like the fact that you and your brethren, according to the flesh, are being treated this way, and it's wrong, and it ought to stop.
Yeah, and
when they don't say anything, it throws up question marks. It really does.
Yeah, and I'm only jumping in just because time is short. But, William, the second point in 10 that I made in my article is that there is a real reason for the frustration and anger in the black community. And for white America to not understand it or to not acknowledge it, it's a blind spot. It's basically saying, well, it didn't affect my world. It didn't. The bomb didn't go off in my neighborhood. The fire didn't affect my family. There's something obviously very small-minded about it. And my first caller on Friday, William, was a black American, very honoring and appreciative of the broadcast. But what he said was, we just want some empathy. We want your community to recognize our pain and show empathy. So I hurt as I say this. I don't want to over-dramatize it, but I get teary-eyed when I hear what you're saying. It's just, come on. We've got to do better as the body of Christ, and we've got to share the heart of God. Because your pain is my pain, especially in the Lord. You know, it's got, and even if there's some level of, you know, we understand there's going to be exaggeration on each side and there's going to be misperception on each side, but there is a reason for the pain. It's not just imagined. It's not just because you're somebody's political pawn or something like that. And it's not because of Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. There are real issues. There may be people who try to play on those issues for their own gain, but there are real issues. And yeah, so we'll get upset if there's retaliation against the white community, then we'll talk about it. But until then, we don't. That, again, that's not my heart, but we must change. We must address that. And by God's grace, William, together, may we see that in the church, in America, in our lifetime. May we see that. Hey, I'm out of time, but your call means a lot to me. Thank you. Listen, I'm going to continue this conversation on the next broadcast. Miguel, I wish I could get your call, but out of time, about blacks in the Bible. Call me back. We'll talk about these issues. Let's learn from each other and grow together in the Lord. Visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. Check out latest articles and videos. My bottom line, let's all get together on God's side. He has a side we must all take.